Hello and welcome to this week's Health and Self-Care podcast. My name is Peter Bagshaw. I'm a GP in Somerset, and I'm delighted to be joined today by my friend and colleague, in fact, our producer, David Seeley. And we're delighted to be joined by our guest, Mayank, who we're talking about something that might not seem an obvious choice for an audio podcast, which is comics, and specifically how they can be used to help people, children and others, with type 1 diabetes. So do you want to tell us a bit about how you got into this, Mayank, and what your interest is in this?
Certainly, Peter. Hi there, David and Peter and everyone listening. Hi. Essentially, I've worked as a diabetes specialist for about 18 years now, looking after a number of adults who live with diabetes, different types of diabetes. And it was through conversations with a very good friend of mine some years ago where we found that a number of people, when they're diagnosed with diabetes when they're young, particularly type 1 diabetes, often found that it was quite a difficult experience for them, in the sense that information would be relayed to their parents, as you might expect, they're young children, and perhaps not so much information was imparted to them. So it presented an opportunity to create something new.
Perhaps we'd better start at the very beginning for our listeners, if that's okay. So type 1 and type 2 diabetes, very different animals. Type 2 is the common one, tends to affect older people, especially if they are overweight. Type 1, often younger people, comes out of the blue, much more severe. Do you want to say a little bit more about the differences between the two?
Yeah, certainly, Peter. So you're right. So the most common types of diabetes are type 1 and type 2 diabetes. Historically, type 1 diabetes would come out of the blue, as you just said, Peter, typically in children. But increasingly, we're seeing it more in adults now globally, believe it or not, they're more than children. So it's not just affecting children essentially anymore. And type 2 diabetes, which is the risk of which is increased by individuals perhaps who are overweight or less physically active, perhaps not making the most healthy dietary choices, was traditionally something you saw in people over the age of 50 or 60. We're now seeing that in children. So everything's completely flipped. So it's an interesting time. But our focus for this project work was around type 1 diabetes.
Type 1 is the one that most people need insulin to control, isn't it? And so there's the risk of hypos and all these other things. So quite a difficult condition to manage for anyone, but particularly for children. And that's why you've stepped into this space, I guess.
Yes, Peter. So if you have type 1 diabetes, you have to take insulin daily to survive, literally to live. And it can only be administered by injections or by a personal pump device that you wear. There are no insulin tablets, for example. It has to be taken through jabs or through a machine or pump device attached to you 24 hours a day. And for us in childhood, yeah, so it's a challenging disease for children and adults to live with. Lots of decisions you've got to think about every day. The food choices you make, how physically active are you going to be? Are you safe to drive? Are you safe to go to work a shift? Can I be eating that naughty food right now? If I'm ill, the stress of illness can make my sugar levels go high. You get the idea. There's lots of things that we all take for granted without type 1 diabetes, which again, part of the appeal for creating a bespoke resource for type 1 diabetes was to give people some assurance that there's things out there to help.
Yes, thank you, Mayank. And yeah, we are here today, ostensibly in a minute as well, to talk about the Type 1 Comet books through Revolve Comet that you've been involved in creating, which are a brilliant resource. So we'll get onto that in a minute. But I'm always interested to discover more about how people become clinicians, what sort of draws you into that life. So what's your journey to becoming into the position you are today, Mayank?
How long have you got, Dave?
Easy 5 minutes.
So my interest in this becoming a doctor stemmed from when I was doing my GCSEs. So when I was about 16, I was drawn more towards science subjects as a sort of youngster. And then I did some work experience in different departments, like a biochemistry lab. I spent time in a hospital ward, and that's talked to some doctors, some nursing staff. I just sat there and looked at it. I thought, you know what? I really enjoyed what I've seen. I think I could do this. So then you choose the relevant A-levels, of course, you apply to medical school. And I was lucky enough to be offered a place at Southampton University, where I studied for 5 years, got my medical degree, did some general training for the first few years, more exams after that to decide to come as a specialist. And then it was whilst I was training across general departments, I'm sure Peter may relate to this, it felt like diabetes was following me. It seemed to be everywhere, you know, different departments. And for me, that how different diseases, operations, and processes affect diabetes was really interesting to me. That's why I chose to be a specialist. I did exams, applied, 8 years of training, and then here I am, specialist in diabetes.
And you may know better, but to me as a generalist, it's still a bit of a mystery. You know, we think maybe some viruses trigger it, autoimmune, but we still don't really know why type 1 diabetes hits people, do we?
knows? You're right, with type 1 diabetes, lots of mystery remains after all these years. Essentially, for reasons not fully understood, is it viruses, something that triggers your bone body's immune system to react to parts of your own cells that make insulin to recognize them as foreign invaders and attack them and destroy them, which is why, therefore, there's a need for somebody to administer insulin externally, because your ability to make it yourself has been taken away, sadly.
And as all good comic book fans know, mystery is a key element in a successful comic book series. So I think it's a really great idea that you guys have taken to using that medium to explore type 1 diabetes, particularly for sort of children and for a general audience off the back of that, which is the comic book audience. So it really fits nicely. How did you come to help create those comics, Mayank?
Sure. So you're right. So mystery is a great hook to tell a story. And I love storytelling. I've always loved being a bit nerdy since I was a kid, really, like superheroes and sci-fi, those sorts of things. And I worked with a colleague of mine who I trained with as well, a chap called Partha. He's a consultant in diabetes in Portsmouth. And we're both nerdy and geeky. We sat there one day and thought, surely between us, we can create a resource initially aimed at younger people to educate about diabetes, type 1 diabetes, but not just for them, for everybody, something universal for them, their parents, their friends, to make something all inclusive, if you like. And through the power of storytelling, the power of analogy, using mystery as a key theme, which we'll touch on, I'm sure, we drafted our series of stories about type 1 diabetes.
And before we go any further, perhaps it's worth just asking you for a website, so that if people are interested, they can pull up some of your comics while we're talking about them.
Certainly, Peter.
And perhaps you better offer a disclaimer that I think you don't get royalties from this. You're not selling anything, are you?
No. So from the off, we're very clear, Partha and I, before we even met Danny from the company, revolvecomics.com is the website. We're very clear to want to create a resource that'll be free at the point of origin for everybody. No charge, no commission, no fees. Partha and I have done this all for our off our own backs and our own time, off the clock, put it all together. And has this been a real labor of love, a lovely thing to be involved in? And in terms of context, Peter, Danny, who I've worked with since 2014, is based in Ireland. I've only physically met him once in all that time. It's been all Teams, emails, Zoom, etc. The power of technology has been embraced to bring these things to the fore.
Indeed, and it probably doesn't exist.
Yes. I've been busted, yeah.
Well, I was going to say, was the one time you met him, Mayank, was that potentially when you won the award in 2017?
Oh, bless you. No, we're very humbled to win an award and some national diabetes awards for various categories of things you do to support diabetes care. We got an education award, which was lovely. But no, I think I was by coincidence in Ireland for a meeting, and just the airport, literally half an hour for a coffee at the airport near Danny, was a forum to discuss, I think, comic 2 or 3, I think it was, but it was just a chance to physically be there and catch up.
So again, sort of trying to set the scene for our listeners, what ages are these comics aimed at, and what are the messages that you're trying to get across?
Yeah, so no one would wish type 1 diabetes on anybody, of course, and we just wanted to create something, a resource that is just something that we haven't done our research, Peter. There's nothing in the marketplace like this at the time we came together. The aim was to draft something suitable for older children, probably sort of 8 to 10 years plus, but through the visual medium, because people learn differently, as you well know. We have visual learners, etc. And to offer up something with a sort of familiarity to it in terms of the superhero comic-y genre, which seems a natural thing for lots of younger people, felt a good place to start. But as it's grown organically over the years, grown-ups and adults in equal measure, as well as children, seem to really enjoy it. So we sort of badge it as older children and beyond and above, really. But obviously, we trust parents to look at it first and decide if this is for them or their own children. And there's a disclaimer on the website for that.
And as somebody who does read graphic novels and comics as an adult, I think I blame that actually on my mum when I was a child. I was allowed to have the Beano and the Dandy because they were cheap, but I was not allowed to have the American comics, you know, the Marvel and the DC as a child. Right. And I was always fascinated with Batman, the 1960s TV show. Still my favourite Batman, by the
classic.
Way.
Classic, yeah.
Absolutely love it. But yeah, so so then as an adult, you know, when those things you're sort of denied as a child, sometimes you come back to them and you get, well, you've got your own money and nobody's telling you what to do anymore.
Yeah.
Getting a bit carried away. So yeah, so certainly, I'm a big fan now of, you know, like, you know, characters like Batman and The Flash and some of the other sort of more niche stuff like The Boys and things like that. I really enjoyed, as a comic book fan, I think there's a couple things that it does really well. It does show, it does not tell. It is, I mean, it's very, very good in terms of the artwork and the storytelling. It doesn't talk down to its audience. It really explores the themes of type 1 diabetes through science fiction in a very interesting way. And comic books have always been really good at using sort of metaphor and analogy to kind of and to make big ideas understandable in a way, you know, like Peter, you might be surprised. I know you're a science fiction fan. At the level to which, you know, like quantum universe, the multiverse, string theory, these kind of huge theories are actually explored in real time by comic book heroes. Like The Flash, you can like run between multiverses as Spider-Man exists in all of these different universes at the same time. So I think it's a fantastic way of exploring and making the type 1 diabetes and making it understandable. But I also really liked the humor and the way that it kind of parodies other comic books and other series, but I might get onto that in a minute. Peter, I think you want to chip in.
I'm just about to totally destroy my clinical credibility by saying I'm a secret Trekkie, and they explore all these things. So
it's all good, Peter.
People who
you're with friends, you're among friends. It's
hard. Cheers. We are both doing our live long and prosperous hand gestures. So you're spared, audience, in not being able to see us both being Trekkies.
Yeah, it was both good.
I'm interested, Mike, in, you know, I agree, David, it's a fascinating way of exploring it. What are the serious messages and maybe not so serious messages that you're trying to get across to children living with what's a really very challenging disease?
Yeah, thank you. So, yeah, as mentioned, it is aimed at kids and anybody, really. But essentially, in our clinical practice, Pathra and I and others, we take great pride in our clinical work, and we would never put our names or energy into something we didn't have, you know, the appetite for, really feel had legs, if you like. So there are a number of themes I touched on earlier about living with type 1 diabetes that present challenges to people, such as I say, being unwell, traveling across the world in different time zones, navigating, having surgery, and having to take insulin, all those sorts of things, and adapting to a world where the modern world is in diabetes, for example, type 1, there's more wearable technology and devices. So our most recent issue focused on that squarely is about technology and that application of that. And so, I mean, we did the first one in 2014-15. No one knew where it's going to go. So we just thought, okay, we'll do one and just leave it. And as Dave was talking about, there's a comic story, but that's the inside front cover. We've got that very standard format. The inside front cover sets the scene, if you like, of what's the context is for the story. And the very back page gives some real life tips and hints of how to live well with some resources that fit with the theme of the story. So, for example, volume one's littered with some resources online where people can look at if they've just been diagnosed with type 1, for example, which are non-comic book resources, I should say. And the second one, which was Attack of the Ketones, there's some guidance there if you're not very well, some tips of things you can do to sort of recover from the illness a bit quicker from a diabetes perspective. So we try to frame it in that way, real world tips and fantasy story with an introduction setting the scene and context, each covering different genres in entertainment, popular culture mediums across 6 issues to date.
And that is a great vehicle, actually, the way that each issue shifts, not just in the content, but in the method, the tone of it, the way the artwork is delivered. You know, like one is like a noir, one is like a spy parody, one is a very sort of high sci-fi. But they're really good. And I was going to say as well, I think not only have you put your name and your time to this, you also your image, because you and Partha both appear in the comics as well, don't you? It's Cat.
Yeah.
Lovely.
Yeah. We just had a bit of fun with it, really. So the reason we're appearing in them, not to be in the story itself, Peter, but we're there on the inside front cover, underneath the sort of setting text, alongside individuals who kindly given their stories to inform our storyline, a couple of people, and a couple of people with diabetes themselves who kindly reviewed the story before it went live to make sure it was all okay. So if that's our way of saying thank you to them, is they get depicted as comic characters alongside us.
That's absolutely brilliant and makes it more real. If I can just sort of put my medical hat back on for a second, you mentioned wearable devices, and I assume you're meaning CGMs, continuous glucose monitors, which have been a bit of a game changer, and they're even now starting to look at insulin pumps, aren't they? Do you want to say a bit about that?
Yeah, so thank you. So volume 6 is called Awake and Pumped, which covers 2 things, actually. I'll jump into if I've got time. And that went live on World Diabetes Day, November the 14th, last month. And for this offering, I'll outline the context, Peter. So we're now in an age where through various blood testing, you can potentially predict who may go on to develop type 1 diabetes. If you screen relatives and siblings of individuals affected, this is a brave new world territory. You can screen and identify people who potentially the sort of immune system gun is loaded, if you like, in terms of who may go on to trigger at some point. You can surveil these people, keep an eye on them, which means they won't potentially present in a precipitous car crash state 3 o'clock in the morning in the middle of A&E with no clue something was wrong. Whereas by identifying people, you can tell. And the reason they're identifying people is because there's now a potential therapy out there you can offer people that can delay the progression of type 1. You can't prevent it, very sadly, but you can delay its progression. So that's why that's covered in this current issue. The wearable technology, Peter, yes, people are wearing glucose monitoring devices, and they're also wearing insulin pumps more and more, which is why we felt it was a time was right to depict this in our comic, give it the comic treatment, as it were.
Fantastic. And as a GP, an initial presentation of type 1 diabetes as a child is something that can be very, very challenging. You know, we all know it's thirst and things like that, but actually it can present very acutely as apparently just a viral illness, can't it? So do you want to sort of just say to our audience what they should look out for?
Sure. So the presentation of type 1 diabetes, as you say, Peter, can be very insidious versus very textbook obvious. So there are some real tells to really look for closely. The classic national campaigns around the four T's: tired, thirsty, toilet, as in passing more water day and night, and thinner, unplanned weight loss. So any of those, along with marked drowsiness, fatigue, should prompt a very basic finger prick sugar test at the very least, I would suggest, for any age person presenting with those kind of symptoms. It's a very quick test to measure a blood glucose right now, real time, to get a clue, could this be caused by diabetes?
And of course, in very young children and babies, who can still get type 1 diabetes, can't they? These things aren't always obvious. So it can be a tricky one to miss and a dangerous one to miss.
It can, sadly, yes. And there are some high-profile cases of missed and late diagnoses, very sadly. There's a big push nationally to really raise awareness hugely, particularly amongst children, young children particularly, as you say, Peter. It'd be very difficult. So I think I don't manage children, but I would definitely be on the mindset advocating an ill child in front of me for any reason, irritable, groggy, whatever, just check a sugar level. It takes 2 seconds.
I'm being more positive with the new CGMs and so on that we've got now, with control of diabetes being better. A lot of the things that maybe people thought of as being associated with type 1 diabetes in the past, like nerve damage, even loss of fingers and limbs and this sort of thing, that presumably is preventable to a degree now, is it?
So sadly, high sugar levels for years and years in any kind of diabetes does increase the risk of various damage to the body parts, be it the brain, the eyes, the feet or the kidneys, as you allude to. So certainly getting glucose levels managed in a much better bandwidth through technology is a game changer in terms of reducing the future risk of progression, absolutely. So it's still quite new technology in the world. We still need a further, you know, at least 5-10 years worth of data collection to really clock how much it's really capping the rates of progression to damage the body from being ravaged by diabetes necessarily. But the tech has been a great enabler in keeping people living better lives. The tech is incredible what it can achieve, yeah.
And that's really interesting. I'm always interested to hear about new technological breakthroughs. Are there any other aspects of technology, for example, proliferation of AI and machine learning or anything like that that's helped?
So the great, well, pumps in the last few years, Dave, back in the day, a pump device, you'd be attached to it and you manually have to sort of press buttons to regulate how much insulin you get delivered. The most modern pumps now, there's wireless communication between the pump itself and the glucose sensing device in the body, which auto-regulates the glucose insulin delivery rate, and it can suspend or increase the insulin based on someone's predicted glucose level. It's amazing. So it's not quite artificial pancreas because the user has still got to tell it, I'm eating some carbohydrate. So it's not fully Terminator Robocop level yet, but the individual still has, there are still human factors involved in making sure the delivery insulin is appropriate.
I think I'm quite relieved it's not Terminator. That doesn't sound a great outcome.
Bad choice of analogy.
What are the other messages that your comic is getting across, Mike?
I think we're trying to just instill that too often the media reports people suffer with diabetes all the time. You can live very well with diabetes. You can live well with cancer, as we all know, but you always hear the doom and gloom. We're trying to give people some optimism and a sort of entertaining but not taking away the seriousness of type 1 diabetes in a way that hopefully resonates with people and empowers that I got this. So-and-so in the comic had this struggle. I've had that struggle. I've got this. Just to inspire and inform and challenge stigma is a big thing we're trying to do, Peter, as well. The misconceptions and stigma are still awful, sadly, in the diabetes community and beyond. Yeah, sadly, yeah.
And a term we use in the discussion just prior to this, which I'd not heard before, Mayank, you brought to our attention, the term graphic medicine. When I read these comics, as a commissioner of mental health services and a father, my son has epilepsy, it did make me think this is a great idea, a great vehicle for communicating these big ideas to a general audience, for children and up. And sometimes, you know, that these things are scary or they're not easy to understand. So I really appreciate why you did do it for type 1 diabetes and you continue to do it. But my mind's worrying on all these other potential applications for how we might be able to put sort of more of these things out there into the world. What are your feelings on the potential of graphic medicine beyond what you've already done? What do you want to do next with the comics? Are you going to keep them coming or...
Thank you. I mean, yeah, I focus heavily on type 1 diabetes to date. There's no reason why, as you say, the world's your oyster today, really. There's all manner of other health conditions you could look at and just build an analogy, ask people's lived experience and what threads and themes, frustrations, and take that as a jump off point to weave that into a fantasy narrative of sorts, I think is probably how I'd look at it. I've got no personal ideas right now for themes, but that's how I would approach it from the off. What's the ask? What are people frustrated by? How can I tap into a story?
And I think that's absolutely right. What you're doing in this field is so applicable to other areas. And you touched on language, and that's so important, isn't it? Whether we see ourselves as victims or survivors, whether we're seeing ourselves as suffering from something or living with, and hopefully living well with something, can make a huge difference to our outlook, can't it?
Absolutely, Peter. There's still a lot of doom and gloom, and it shouldn't be. But it's mixed blessings. I appreciate globally, diabetes ravages lives globally. It still does. I appreciate that. But we should equally celebrate the wins. You know, insulin has been in the world for 100 years or so. Without it, there'd be no survivors in type 1. So we have to celebrate what we do have and the technology what's enabling people to do now that they couldn't do before. So there are reasons to be optimistic and positive, absolutely.
I'm a child of the 80s. I was born in 1984. So when I was at school, sort of late 80s, early 90s, they used to sometimes wheel the VCR out attached to a big TV. Right? That was always a treat. But I remember there was one particular thing we used to watch sometimes, which was like a cartoon about how your blood cells like fight infections, like the red blood cells and the white blood cells. There were sort of these cartoon characters in these armies. That always really stuck with me, actually. And I think that... yeah, there is something there around the potential of visual storytelling.
Absolutely.
Down these complex things. And I think the more we get people to understand how clever our own bodies actually are, the more maybe they might value that, think more about what they do with them, like in terms of like what you eat, your exercise regime and all of those things, which obviously we're trying to move more towards prevention and things. Obviously, type 1 diabetes is a bit
different. So picking up on that, what Peter said about next ideas, I am involved in some work around people who are neurodiverse. So, for example, that's a great example of someone who sees the world differently. How can we find a way? You can't find one thing for everybody, but certainly offer up some different ways of seeing the conveying medical information, visual narratives that work in different ways. That's the hope.
Yeah, no, that sounds like a really great idea. And I think that the future is bright for graphic medicine. Everyone should go and read these comics. I'll put the
link. Please do. I'm not on commission. Please do.
No. Yeah, no one's getting paid. We're not getting paid. You're not getting paid. But shoot them. They're brilliant. I recommend them highly. Peter?
Thank you.
Just to say, the link will be in the page. We've already spoken about it, but we'll talk about that. But, I mean, diabetes burnout is a big issue, isn't it? So if you can change people's mindset, it's not just a question of feeling nicer. It can have huge real-world implications to their outlook, can't it?
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, it's a hard thing to live with every day, but if you can give people a bit of a way, some tools to live well, that's what we need to do, and some assurance that this, you know, you can do this with some support and help and the care of others and kindness. These are sort of things that other themes that resonate when we do these things as well. No one's alone, Peter. We're trying to instill this idea, not alone. You have others around you. There's resources to help you.
Brilliant. Such an important message. I think we have to sign off, don't we, David? So normally I say go well, but I think today I'll have my inner nerd say live long and prosper.
I absolutely agree. Live long and prosper, everybody. Absolutely, 100%. Thank you.
Thank you.